This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. And for those of you who are not familiar with Layla, Layla is our nutritionist in residence. She has a master's degree in the field of nutrition in addition to being a registered dietitian. And let me count the years. How many years of experience in the field of
Since 2003.
Okay, that would put it at 15 plus years.
Yeah.
With background at the Atkins Center, You're fortunate enough to have a sojourn working with Dr. Atkins himself.
Yeah.
Great. So what's the next question, please?
We have from Marcia an email. I'm a 72-year-old white female who has recently been diagnosed with gallbladder sludge.
Okay, stop. What are the risk factors for gallbladder disease?
White female.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The four Fs. Sometimes the
female,
five Fs.
Okay.
Female.
Yeah.
Fat.
Okay, she's not.
Fair.
Yep. White.
Fertile.
Fertile. She's 72.
How many kids does she have? She doesn't say.
She doesn't say.
And I would add one other, which is a C, constipated.
Ah.
Constipation is sometimes a risk factor.
Okay.
But, you know, what we're saying is basically it's, although not confined to Caucasians,
right,
but a higher prevalence in Caucasians who are female and associated with metabolic syndrome.
Marcia says she's not overweight. I wear a size 2 to 4. I walk 3.5 miles a day. I am taking Synthroid, Cytomel, Atenolol, Digoxin.
Hmm. Speaks of heart problems.
Yeah.
Arrhythmias.
Yeah. She takes magnesium taurate. She's wondering, is 100 grams of carbs per day too many carbs? Because she's also on a low-fat diet because of the sludge.
Right.
Which may be helpful.
Right.
In, you know. And if there's stones, if there's discomfort.
Yeah, but, you know, there's sort of a push-pull on that because on the one hand, you will not provoke gallbladder attacks because fat causes the gallbladder to contract and you'll be less symptomatic. But I wonder if all those carbs may somehow contribute to more accumulation, because actually it's been found that on low-fat diets, you can actually get more gallbladder sludge accumulated
because there's no contraction.
There's no
contraction. It's a catch-22, really.
Yeah, you want there's stasis of the gallbladder. It just stays there.
And it crystallizes, and it's sludgy.
In fact, one of the proposed treatments for sludge is to take a lot of olive oil with a purgative. You know, there's the so-called liver gallbladder flush, and it really makes your gallbladder contract and supposedly release the sludge. I wouldn't do that if you actually have stones, because you can actually provoke a very painful gallbladder attack.
Yeah.
And studies actually show that you're not expelling stones, that whatever you see there is like congealed olive oil. It looks like greenish pebbles, but if you examine them, I mean, if you reach in the toilet and you...
They're olive oil globules.
Globules. Yeah. So that's not really, you know, I don't know what necessarily that's doing.
Yeah.
So what can you do? Well, I would take fish oil. I would definitely take fish oil. And that's a fat, but actually it's been shown to have a preventive effect on gallstones.
I was thinking phosphatidylcholine.
Sure.
Maybe, what else for that? Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
For sludge. I would not advise Marcia to undertake a detox without supervision.
Right.
Because that could also work against you.
Fasting, if you do something very problematic like that. For people. Yeah. And like crash dieting, very problematic for people with
that gallstones. That can cause gallstones. Yeah. Yo-yo dieting, yeah. Crash dieting
right.
Can cause... Non-fat diets can cause gallstones.
What's the proposal? The doctor wants to just observe it?
There's no doctor involved in this email. She's just wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah, what to do.
Well, you know, one theory is, I mean, if you have stones, mm-hmm. while you're healthy, have your gallbladder removed, because mm-hmm. it's more going to be more problematic if you're like 85 and feeble, mm-hmm. Or if you have an emergency and, you know, you have an attack. So elective gallbladder removal is sometimes indicated, not usually for sledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. The other thing that there is this natural thing that is said to be helpful for sledge. I'm going to refer to my own article, if you'll talk for a minute here.
Oh, that's good. Marcia's also saying, I read in one of your articles that magnesium was important. Is magnesium taurate, which I'm currently taking for heart health,
especially
a kind
good
of magnesium?
For the, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the one to take, Marcia. Absolutely. Wonderful for heart, for blood pressure. She's on atenolol, digoxin. And, yeah.
So, I mean, things mm-hmm. that actually help are, in effect, the low-carb diet, fiber, mm-hmm. the Brenneman diet, which is mm-hmm. the foods that precipitate gallbladder attacks in decreasing order of frequency were eggs, pork, onion, poultry, milk, coffee, citrus, corn, beans, and nuts. Now, you'll notice that some of the foods are high-fat foods, but some of them are not. Like, you know, eggs and pork and poultry may be high-fat, but citrus is not high-fat, and corn is not high-fat. Mm-hmm. Eggs seem to be a particular culprit causing gallbladder attacks in 93% of patients. That is, patients with stones. She doesn't have stones yet.
Could be the fatty yolk.
And, you know, as we said, weight loss is not great. Coffee is really good for this.
Mm.
And it has to be caffeinated according to studies.
Because you want stimulant. You want that. You want the liver to churn out more. And you want to activate that.
In fact, this is not for the feeble-hearted. But
let me guess. Coffee enema?
Yep. Yep. That's because that'll get right up there.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that the coffee's not...
Not hot.
Not that hot.
Don't do that.
Warm. Not iced coffee.
Not iced coffee. No.
And, you know, you want really pure organic coffee because you don't want to put that up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's certainly a wake-up call when you have caffeine in coffee that you put in an enema. Move your bowels regularly if you're constipated.
Yes.
Deal with it. Maybe that's why coffee, exercise, fiber, and magnesium help reduce the frequency of gallstones.
Hmm.
Exercise, move around, jump around. Olive oil is beneficial. Moderate consumption of olive oil, and that's a fat,
mm-hmm.
may lower your chance of developing gallstones. There's something called what I was looking for here, and I found in my article.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice when I can look stuff up, especially when I've written it myself.
Isn't that cool?
Because I know it's a reliable source.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because I know the guy. Roacol.
Roacol.
It's not sold in the United States. It might be obtainable. It's a chloretic.
Oh, okay.
It's not a statin. It's a herbal medicine popular in Europe. You get somebody to pick some up for you. It contains terpenes like borneol and D-limonene.
D-limonene.
It seems to solubilize bile, which is ideal for this.
Mm.
You know, it's probably not good once you've had stones, but this is an ideal case for using something like Roacol to prevent stone formation.
Hmm.
As you said, lecithin, choline, phosphatidylcholine.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. You're right. Magnesium, fish oil, perhaps SAMe. There is some studies showing that women who have excess bile accumulation associated with severe itching improve with 800 milligrams of SAMe daily. And one study that I'm quoting here, 800 milligrams of SAMe daily was shown to reduce the lithogenicity, stone-forming likelihood of bile.
Wow.
So,
wow.
SAMe.
Interesting.
And that would be precisely what this person's looking for. She does not, you know, just the sledge alone is not the problem. It's when it congeals into stones.
Yes.
So she wants to solubilize it. Probiotics.
Hmm.
There are... certain probiotics that seem to help the circulation. Lactobacillus plantarum which is also reputed to lower cholesterol, can be a one of the, you know, not all probiotics, but it's Lactobacillus plantarum has been
certain Lactobacillus species, right?
And you know, don't go on a birth control pill or
oh, that's another risk factor. Yes, yep. Oral contraceptives.
That's sort of the high hormone state. So there you go.
Well, that's interesting. All right. Marcia, we hope you feel better
soon. You'll find that article. Just Google. The way I found it was I just went gallbladder Hoffman, and I found my article.
There you go. So pick the topic and follow it with Hoffman, and you will find Dr. Hoffman's articles. That's great. We have an email about neurotransmitter tests. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I just received my urine neurotransmitter test back from Life Extension. My serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine were pretty low, below normal. Could this be contributing to my anxiety and depression? I've had bad digestive issues, so who knows if it's the gut causing the neuro issues or the brain causing my gut issues. Are there any supplements I can take to
This is a test that I signed on to, you know, we remember we were doing it.
Yeah.
About
10,
15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became skeptical about that test because what we're talking about neurotransmitters that govern mood, such as the catecholamines that are associated with a heightened sense of arousal or joie de vivre or, you know, in some cases even anxiety, you know, because they go both ways. And serotonin, which is associated with
confidence, everything is right in the world.
But we can't oversimplify because there's what you really want is you want to see how much of those are available at the level of the cells in the brain. So that would involve us maybe a spinal tap, but not even a spinal tap because a spinal tap, you know, would just would reveal what's in the spinal fluid, which supposedly circulates to the brain. But what we want to see is if we could have a scan that says, oh, the serotonin isn't lighting up in your prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
You know, like something that would show where these chemicals are active. And we don't have scans that quite do that yet.
Yeah.
So we could actually say, oh, your serotonin isn't active in your brain, or it's hyperactive, or it's not going to the right place.
And if it's in your urine, it's definitely not in the right place. And,
well, that's true, but see, the problem is the kidneys make some of that stuff. And most of the serotonin that you make is made in your gut.
Yes, about 90% of it.
So if it appears in your urine, where is it coming from? Does it mean that your brain is low in neurotransmitters? It's, I don't find that test is scientifically valid.
Yeah, it's almost like testing your urine for pH.
Right.
It's not...
So then, you know, it's an appealing paradigm because what they'll do is maybe Life Extension says, oh, you know, you're low in serotonin, so here, take some 5-HTP, we'll sell you some of that. Or you're low in dopamine, we'll give you some tyrosine.
Tyrosine, yeah.
Or, you know, you're low in, what else is there? You know, phenylalanine for catecholamines maybe or something like that. But, you know, I think it's kind of an imprecise test.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so. it's unfortunately, it's harnessed to supplement sales in the case of Life Extension.
Right. True.
I mean, it's a good outfit. They write a lot of great stuff.
They write good articles, right.
But, you know, there's a bit of a commercial imperative to saying you're low in these things and we're going to fix you up with some supplements that they might recommend.
Yeah. I think this person would need a workup.
Yeah, I mean,
and not just depend on this test.
But, you know, what are some causes of anxiety? I mean, ups and downs of blood sugar could be causing anxiety.
Right. This person has bad digestive issues, so is the digestive causing you to be anxious?
The microbiome has an impact, you know.
You know, when our stomach hurts, we're not happy and
we're getting signals through our vagal nerve, which is a big, you know, 4-lane highway from the gut to the brain and the brain to the gut.
Yeah.
And you know, so that could be part of it. You know, is the brain causing the irritable bowel? Is the irritable bowel causing the brain to be irritable?
Right. I would say address the digestive issues.
That's a clue.
See what they are.
That's a clue.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, what else? We could use things like theanine or CBD. CBD we like a lot these days for anxiety.
Yeah.
More magnesium has a calmative effect. in men who are anxious, it could be a hormonal problem. They could be low in DHEA. Mm-hmm. They could be low in testosterone. You know, the testosterone is sort of like, you know, what the Cowardly Lion needed.
Put him up.
Yeah, but he was well, he was very anxious.
Yes, yes. Right? Oh, yeah.
But then he got his, apparently he got his prescription for testosterone.
Right. Other things helpful for anxiety, inositol is helpful.
I wrote a whole monograph about inositol, yeah. I remember in the early 90s about that, that it has a common effect. You have to take a lot of it, though. It can cause diarrhea.
Yeah, it can. If you go up to about 10 grams or so, that
would
be
about the dose that's required for OCD and anxiety, unfortunately.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So get your gut issues checked out. Mm-hmm. That would be the first order of business. And then, all right. Thank you for your email.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours.
We have an email from Judy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Lately, when I get up in the morning, I'm a little dizzy. It does not last long. I'm wondering if it can have anything to do with allergies. I don't wake up feeling stuffed up.
How old is this person?
Don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, look, it's a remarkable feat that we go from lying down to standing up and we don't pass out every time.
Yes.
Because there has to be a lot of what is called baroreceptor signaling to your blood vessels to change the way that your blood vessels clamp down, basically. Because literally, I mean, let's say you have blood vessels that are made of glass, you know, and you stand up, well, all the blood would just flow down to your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you'd pass out.
Yes.
So now, as we age, in certain conditions, our baroreceptors, the signals are not as robust, just like everything, you know, is not as robust, and it gets out of kilter.
So it's like an orthostatic hypotension?
Yes. I mean, she does adapt.
Yeah.
She does adapt, but there's a moment of orthostatic hypotension. So what do you do with people like that? Well, you can, you know, retrain them. I think that's one of the nice things about yoga. Yoga really is helpful for that.
It's great for that.
I think yoga probably, it's more preventive than restorative on that, but you could, you know, all those positions really help to signal the autonomic nervous system, which really this is what this is about. Because the voluntary nervous system, you know, you raise your hand, you lower your hand, you know, you put your finger to your nose, you know, you twitch your toe. Well, voluntary, but all this stuff happens below the level of consciousness in your autonomic nervous system. It's kind of automatic. So dysautonomia is characterized by extreme lightheadedness and dizziness, inappropriate lighthead. And she has something, we all have a little bit of dysautonomia, I think, as we age. And so it is not uncommon for people to get up and like, whoa, you know, I'm going to hit the deck.
Right.
Now, she also doesn't mention, is she on blood pressure medication?
Oh, yeah. No mention of that. I'm wondering if she's a little dehydrated.
That, big time.
That's the first thing I want to rule
big
out is,
time.
You're dehydrated, that'll make you dizzy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you say it doesn't last long.
Right.
And you're...
I mean, for some of these patients, we can give them a little volume, some water, plus salt. You have to have some salt.
Yes.
If they have low blood pressure.
Yeah.
Another measure you can take is you can give them licorice, but you have to be careful with licorice because licorice can deplete your potassium.
Right.
It will raise your blood pressure, which is a good effect in some people with low blood pressure. People with high blood pressure, you don't want to take a lot of licorice.
Drink
the other thing
broth.
Is there's some medications that raise blood pressure that we've given to some patients who are weak and woozy. Mm-hmm. And some patients like this...
That's another article you wrote. the weak and woozy gene?
Gene, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just remembered that.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a very old article that I wrote. It's a classic.
It's a classic.
In the archives.
You could go read it at drhoffman.com.
Yeah. There's a genetic component to that. Mm-hmm. We now actually have identified that gene. In a landmark study that was amazing research, they actually identified the gene that is responsible for
the weakened
receptor to the neurotransmitters that govern a response to position change.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Judy, thank you for that email. Oh.
And then, you know, the other thing, just to throw it right.
Yeah.
Those could be inner ear problems, you know, like
the
balance center. You know, and so sometimes
calcium crystals moving around.
It could be positional vertigo.
Yeah.
Positional vertigo, which, you know, does occur with aging.
Mm.
You know, so that kind of is not even about the baroreceptors. It's about the inner ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in response to vestibular rehabilitation, which is...
There are exercises that your ENT will show you, your ear, nose, and throat doctor will show you.
And you know who invented those?
Who?
Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Oh, the other Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Yeah, my namesake.
In New York.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And he's just, he was an established young physician when I was in my training.
Uh-huh.
And I met him while I was in training, and he saw my name tag, and I saw his name tag. And we looked at each other and we said, this is going to be trouble. And it is, because I get phone calls for him and he got, you know, occasionally the wrong patient shows up at his office.
Oh no, you needed the ear doctor.
Right.
You needed the, okay.
But he's an excellent physician. Mm-hmm. And I think he's still active. He's a little older than I am, but I think he's,
okay.
You know, professor emeritus now.
Uh-huh. Terrific. We've got a very interesting anecdote from Mark. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm writing to give you a brief account of my experience with statin drugs. I had a 99% blocked LAD artery at 42 years old.
Wow.
I was actively exercising. My cholesterol, my subfractions were always good. I was given statins, even though my total cholesterol and LDL were very low. I continued to block up my arteries. I finally went to a lipidologist who ran extensive advanced lipid profiles on me and told me to throw away my statins and focus on my hemoglobin A1C, which was 6.5.
He was just diabetic.
Yeah. So this caused insulin to be high, which damaged the endothelial lining of the vessels. Mm-hmm. I don't believe Mark says statins are appropriate for all stent patients. I am living proof.
Okay.
Because now he's got his A1C down to 5.2.
Well, so here's the thing. Let's discuss it briefly because it is the debate about statins is about primary prevention.
Yeah.
So if you're somebody with high cholesterol, but you don't have significant arterial disease, is there any value to taking statins? Some people say yes, but I think that the studies are weak on that and I don't recommend. So for example, we saw a patient today that has a little bit of blockage, and I reassured her that all things considered, she doesn't have that much blockage.
Yeah, it's minimal.
She doesn't need to be on a statin. And by the way, when she has devastating side effects from being on statins, so it's out of the question.
She couldn't take it at all.
Muscle cramps, sleep problems, those kind of problems. So anyway, but what's called secondary prevention means once you have established coronary artery disease. So what are the criteria for coronary artery disease? You've had a heart attack.
Yeah.
You have angina.
Mm-hmm.
Or you've had a bypass or a stent.
Yes.
That puts you into secondary prevention. You've already got it.
Yeah.
So there, the studies actually are pretty good for statins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm getting from this is he doesn't know whether the statin was beneficial or not. He just went to a lipidologist who's supposedly an expert, and
the lipidologist told him to throw away his statin.
Somebody who studies cholesterol and lipids, you know, a specialist in that field. Which I'm surprised that most lipidologists are all in on the statins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you know, a surgeon who says, don't get surgery. You know, it's like, that's one of their major tools. So I don't know what went into that lipidologist's analysis.
Right, what kind of advanced lipid profiles he did. And
I'd have to see it, and I'd have to even maybe have a conversation with him to see what his rationale is. But there is evidence that whether or not statins lower cholesterol, or whether or not you have a high cholesterol, that statins exert a protective effect once you've had a stent. See, once you've had a stent is a little piece of metal that goes into your artery to keep it open. And it's an irritant. And as an irritant, there's scarring. And it will scar down and reocclude, it'll close.
Yeah.
And so they actually coat stents now with various substances that have an anti-inflammatory effect.
These are drug-eluting stents.
Exactly. Yeah. Drug-eluting stents. Mm-hmm. And they sort of gradually release the drugs that's within them to reduce the inflammation of the site where they will have contact with the arterial wall.
Yeah.
So, however, that is not a perfect solution. The statins seem to have somewhat, whether or not they lower cholesterol, they have an anti-inflammatory effect, preventing more occlusion or secondary events. They say. Yeah. They say. So, I mean, look, there's got to be a reason that the lipidologists don't worry about
your stuff. Yeah, well, and he looked at his A1C because Mark was on a very high-carb diet.
The other answer is
that all changed.
Yeah, the other answer is he could need to be on a low-carb diet and be on a statin.
Hmm.
You know, double protection.
Yeah. Wow.
I wouldn't say it's an either-or thing.
Yeah.
Now, one problem with statins is that, especially in women, they will increase the hemoglobin A1C sometimes and cause diabetes.
Yeah. Well, get this. His current A1C is a 5.2.
Great.
Awesome. But now his total cholesterol numbers, total is 121. LDL is 51, off statin.
Off statin.
Off statin.
Wow.
HDL is 65. What will the statin...
Okay, so a very orthodox cardiologist would argue, it doesn't matter how low your cholesterol is, we would give you a statin anyway for the anti-inflammatory benefits.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know...
I see that.
I mean, he has like an almost scary low cholesterol, so maybe the lipidologist says, back off, because your cholesterol is so
low
anyway.
Right. I mean, cholesterol is a repair substance. It's actually classified as an antioxidant. Our brains need cholesterol. Okay. Mark, thank you so much for sharing this with us. This is really something.
Interesting.
And continued good health to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, kudos to the lipidologist who's thoughtful about this rather than just reflexly applying a rule.
Yeah.
I think we need less in the way of, you know, paint-by-numbers medicine and a little more analytical medicine when it comes to specific cases. Mm-hmm. On that note, let's sign off for today.
Wow.
That's all the time we have. Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.